Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Unfortunately, Misty is out of town for the next 2 weeks, but fortunately, I have some wonderful guests coming up who are going to be helping me, so I know you're really going to enjoy listening to them. And tonight, I have a wonderful friend who's co-hosting the show with me, and her name is Grace. And welcome aboard, Grace.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie.
Thank you for coming back, because last time when you were on our show, I had so many wonderful responses, and I'm going to explain why. I mean, aside from the fact that you're a wonderful speaker, and I mean, people are really interested in what you had to say. But the reality is that for the women who we work with and who come through my network and just anyone in the situation in general, I would say more than half of them will never get an actual confession out of their husbands, and they'll never have the proof they need that he's gay. They may have various little signs, or they may see things or suspect or even see bigger things. But when you're living with someone who's trying to what I call gaylight you, which is my terminology for gaslighting you or making you think that you're crazy, then it's really difficult because you've already lost faith in yourself and how you believe. So, you know, I know that I first met Grace last year in person. I had the wonderful experience of meeting her when I went to Houston. And when we went down there, we were all telling our stories, and there were several women in the same situation. But Grace so beautifully articulated her situation. I think so many people were able to feel her pain there. And I'm thinking about how excited I am that I'll be seeing you again in a few months in Houston, right?
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was another thing, you know, we'll talk a little bit about at the end, is our upcoming healing weekend in Houston, which was so phenomenal for the women who were there. But getting back to Grace's story, Grace, maybe you can tell people a little bit about your story and your marriage.
Okay. I worked for my ex-gay husband's father, and that's how I met him. And we married after 3 years of seeing one another. And during our dating period, things were not, I had been married before, so things were not like sexually and everything, but he was very kind, and I had two teenage children, and he was very good to them. So we married in 1999, and almost immediately after the marriage, things really started going bad as far as intimacy, and he had a horrible temper that I had not seen before. And so over the years, I saw signs, but I put my head in the sand, I guess is the best way to put it. But in 2007, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and 2 weeks later, he walked out on me. And during the interim time between him leaving and the divorce, I was so focused on my health at that time, I really didn't grieve at my marriage ending or anything. And then after the divorce, and I moved, and it wasn't until then that I started finding, I found an old computer, and that's when I found the gay porn sites that he had been on. I found emails that he had received from men and him sending emails to men. So then I knew what the problem was. But it wasn't until I really had my meltdown is when I found out that he was remarrying. And then all those doubts about me started coming back. I never did get a confession from him because, as far as I know, he has no clue that I've ever found out anything, because, like I said, the divorce had already taken place when I really found out what the problem was in our marriage.
Now, how long were you married altogether?
We were married 9 years altogether.
Okay, and plus you knew him 3 years before that, right?
Right, right.
So I know that normally when Misty's here, you know, we often discuss this as far as being married to somebody who's very emotionally abusive, sometimes physically abusive, as in her case and some of our other women. But we never start out walking into these relationships with people who are being abusive to us, I would say. In almost all cases, it changes once they marry us. Would you say that was pretty much true with your situation?
Absolutely. He never laid a hand on me, ever. But emotionally, yes, he was brutal. And things would set him off that was just so off the wall. I can remember having conversations with him about, why are you so unhappy? He was always unhappy. And we had a very successful business. We had a beautiful home. We lived on 187 acres of land, and we could go and do anything we wanted to do. And at that time, we both had our health, and I just never could figure out why he was always so angry and unhappy. Well, now I know, but back then, I never could put my finger on exactly what it was. The one thing that he did do was he liked to throw things. He never hit me with them. He would throw a shoe at me, or I remember a glass one time being thrown at me, and he would tell me when I'd say, you could have hit me. He said, if I wanted to hit you, I would have, you know.
This is really a strong form of control.
Right.
And I see this, you know, trying to create fear in a situation. I see it as a way of manipulating women to just accept whatever they have to accept, because
right.
It's only a matter of time before they're going to start feeling, well, I don't want to fight back because of either fear of being emotionally bashed or physically bashed. And even though he didn't use any kind of physical violence with you, the threat was there, because when he would throw something and tell you, if I wanted to hit you, I would,
right.
He was just giving you a heads up that you don't know if you say the wrong thing, the next time it might come your way. Did you feel that way sometimes?
Yes, I did. And there were times when I was very afraid of him. I can remember he slept on the couch 90% of the time, never came to bed. But he would be watching something on TV that I wouldn't like, and I would go in the bedroom and watch what I wanted to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if something had not been done, some clothes were in the dryer, or the dishes weren't done the way he thought they should have been done, or whatever, the door would fly open to the bedroom, and it was almost like looking at Satan. And when I say that, I literally mean that. I was afraid of him. And the sad thing in my case was that I lived with a father that was that way. And then my first husband was verbally abusive, and then later became physically abusive, and then went right into a marriage with another man that was emotionally and verbally abusive to me. So I can honestly say that I never had self-esteem. So as much as it hurts women, and I know in one of your newsletters you said that some women had gotten upset when you wrote that we were broken women. But
uh-huh.
It's so true. And you have to own that in order to start healing. You have to own the fact that you're broken. You have to own what you are in order to start healing. And so when I owned the fact that I was a broken woman, my healing process began. And it's been a long journey for me, but the three things that I want to be is whole, healthy, and happy. And that's what I'm working on right now.
And I think that takes a lot of courage. And I agree with you that some people, well, I mean, not too many people got too upset about it, because I think most of our women, by the time they get to me, they're just so miserable in their situation that they're trying to be honest about it. And as you said, you came from a broken home, where you had an abusive parent, then you married an abusive husband, and then you went on to your next marriage, which was also abusive, and this was kind of the norm and the way you were going.
Right.
But I tell women that even if you walk into one of these marriages and you're not broken, even though you're much more prone to do so if you are broken, you'll break while you're in there. So either way, either you were broken ahead of time or you're going to be broken by the time you get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can't escape these marriages unscathed. But, you know, I'm the first to say that, and I've told this to people before about you. You know, unfortunately, they can't see how beautiful you are. I mean, I know you're beautiful on the inside, but you're beautiful on the outside. You're like model beautiful. And I tell women that it doesn't matter what you look like. You know, some women are so concerned, well, I'm not attractive. It doesn't matter. I've met women who aren't the most attractive, but they had high self-esteem. But I meet beautiful women like you and others who are models and actresses who come to me. And their self-esteem is in the same bucket as the rest of ours because they've been fed these messages their whole life that there's something wrong with them.
Right. I think another thing that causes you to lose your self-esteem is the fact that you start blaming yourself. You think that it's you. And they make that very easy. They tend to make you feel that way, so you just accept it. And so when your self-esteem is beat down, and it's a gradual process, it doesn't happen right away. I don't believe any woman, even a broken woman, would marry a man that was rude and abusive or anything right from the get-go. And of everyone that you've sent to me to support them, they all said the same thing. Their husbands, when they were seeing them at the very beginning, were so loving and kind and supportive and everything, but it doesn't take long after you get married to them for them to start changing. And so I just...
And you know what? I really think this is the reason they start changing. I'm going to try to give this some analogy. You know, sometimes when people are looking for a miracle, you know, they go through all kinds of hoops and bounds. You know, I'm talking about like when you're sick, if you have a devastating disease, and then somebody offers you this hope, you know, and you put all your hope in that, you know, basket, and you go there, and of course, modern medicine can only cure a certain amount. Not everybody's going to be cured, or everybody would stay alive forever. And
right.
Some diseases are just so bad that there's nothing you can do to make them better, or you come in too late, or they're too progressive. So rather than feeling appreciative, you know, of course you get angry, and you resent these, you know, people who can't save you, because after all, isn't that their job? And this
right.
is what I really believe that a lot of these men are feeling. They feel they have something. They're marrying you because you're giving them a false sense, you know, I'm saying it's false, but a sense of hope. I don't know where they're getting it from, but at least that they could fall in love, that you can take care of their needs. You're going to make those feelings go away. They're not going to want men anymore. They're going to want you. And when it just doesn't happen through no fault of your own, it's just that they're gay, they turn on you and they blame you, that you're the one who's responsible for them feeling like this.
Absolutely.
And, right? Isn't that similar?
Absolutely.
And it's kind of like tonight in our support chat room, you know, we have a few women who are in there talking about the fact, and this is so interesting because I told them all to listen to this show tonight because this is what it's about. They're all, it just so happened tonight was a very kind of oddball night where just about everybody in the support chat was talking about, you know, they didn't have proof from their husbands, but all of their husbands were blaming them, you know, for whatever problems that were going on in the marriage. You're not being supportive enough, you know, you have this problem. It's always their problem.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want sex enough, and because you don't want sex, I have to go look at gay magazines and gay porno. It's because of your rejection of me. When it's not that at all. I mean, you know, they're just making these lies up and making these women feel worse than they already feel and making them feel responsible. Now, did you find your husband doing that too?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
blaming you for things.
I heard Misty talking about how, you know, she didn't prepare the food right. She didn't fold his laundry right or whatever. That's how he was with me. And he would tell me, if you would change this, then things would get better. And I would change it, and it didn't get better. And I can remember one, this makes me laugh now, but at the time, I just thought, what is wrong here? He brought a magnifying glass in the bathroom to show me that there was dust on the baseboards.
And that he didn't clean good enough, is that the story?
Yeah, just livid because there was dust on the baseboards. And when he said it at first, I said, I don't see any dust. Well, then he went and got the magnifying glass and brought it in so that I could actually see the dust on the baseboards. Just so much, so controlling, so manipulative. And I used to believe that my ex-husband was the poster boy for narcissism, but after supporting some of the women that he set me up with, I found out that they're all, I don't know if they were born narcissistic or because of being gay and trying to hide it, they developed their narcissistic tendencies. But
yeah, that's kind of an interesting question. What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Absolutely. So, but they, it's almost, this is how I have to kind of equate it. It's almost like they have this secret clubhouse that they all go to decide how they're going to handle the situations because they all do things almost the exact same way.
That is the truth. I mean, there are organizations that, you know, men go to and, you know, for support when they're going through this, and they do have a party line. Not all of them, you know, I don't want to make a blanket condemnation because there are some really wonderful gay men out there who, you know, believe in doing the right thing. But some of these support groups for these men, I mean, guys come back and tell me what they say and why you shouldn't tell your wife and, you know, don't tell her, you know, otherwise she's going to take you to court and you'll never see the children, you'll have to pay all this money. You know, they give them 105 reasons why not to be honest with their wives. And it really makes me ill when they do this. You know, they can live a lie and they can go do what they want, but they don't have to tell their wives the truth.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's by no accident, these stories. And also, there's, you know, support groups online. You know, they're all over the place. You don't actually have to go to them. But there's all kinds of support for gay men, you know, who are going through this, but very little as far as I'm concerned, as far as real viable support for women.
Right.
Who feel so lost while they're going through this. If you don't mind, I'd like to just take a moment and... I know I read this a few weeks ago, but I just wanted to read it one more time since you're on the phone.
Sure.
You know, from my newly re-released book, Doom Grooms. And, you know, I wanted to just read this description that I came up with a few years ago. And my book, Doom Grooms, has just been recently released, you know, due to several women saying they really want that book back, you know, out there. So, I had my publisher republish it, so it's now available on regular and also ebook format. But I write in here, you know, a lot of it's about the different kinds of gay men there are, but this is where I first really define the straight gay man. And it says that there's another kind of gay man that are the most difficult kind to live with. I call these men the straight gay men because they are gay men living in a straight men's clothing. No matter what happens, they will never admit to being gay. Not even to themselves. They are in total denial and have all intentions of remaining there forever and ever. The real straight gay men have no sense of remorse for what they are doing to their wives. In fact, they often feel as if they are victims in their marriage and strike back at their spouses in an emotional or physically abusive manner. They blame the wives for their unhappiness and never have a clue about the emotional damage they are doing to these women whom they promise to love, cherish, and respect. They constantly criticize and demoralize their wives when, in fact, there is nothing that the wives could possibly do to make them feel happy or fulfilled. Their wives are women, and they are gay men. These are the men who will never leave their marriages. They are not going to meet some nice gay man who will bring them happiness. That would be unthinkable. They will stay married until the day they die, leading a painful existence and transferring that pain into their wives. More accurately, pouring that pain upon their wives like pouring salt into a wound. We all know that misery loves company, and these men are happy to make you as miserable as they are. These men are usually very homophobic, and they mean it for real. The thought of gay men is sickening to them. They view them as perverted and distorted. They will taunt them and ridicule them. This is how they mentally respond to their own form of self-hatred. To accept gays would mean they'd be accepting that part of them that they work so hard to hide and reject. They are also ultra-paranoid that someone might misinterpret any compassion they might have towards homosexuality, even if they had any. This might point the finger of suspicion their way. And guess what the irony of the straight gay man is? If a woman finally gets smart enough to walk away from the marriage, in almost all cases, he will go and find another woman for a relationship. This is the most frightening aspect of all. Some other unsuspecting woman is going to get trapped, or rather zapped. I see this too often. When women write to me about how hurt they are because their ex-gay husbands are dating other women, their hurt seems even greater than the women whose husbands come out and find men. They really personalize it, even though they know the truth. It's not like they want their gay husbands back, but it's like an extra slap in the face to the women on an emotional level. Just thinking that there are other women out there that can fulfill the needs of their ex-gay husband is very painful. If it's any consolation, rest assured that whatever woman is unfortunate enough to hook up with your gay husband will be just as unhappy as you were. After the dust settles and the new woman is reliving your hell, she'll be wondering what's wrong with her. The worst part about this is that the new woman will always be told how much better of a wife you were than she is. And that's how your ex-husband will be able to start stripping herself and sexual esteem down. And she won't catch on to the gay thing for a lot longer than it took you. After all, he married you before he married again. How could he be gay? Most likely he had children with you. This means he's not gay, right? Some unsuspecting women will inevitably be forced to deal with your nightmare. Tragic, isn't it? And I say, so often these straight gay men, husbands luck out. They have wives who are much kinder and more understanding than the average woman. In my book, Is He Straight? A Checklist for Women Who Wonder. Let me just see where I was at. I have a chapter about the prototype of woman that gay men seek out to marry. It's not an accident that wives of gay men are better than the average wife. These are the women who will keep trying every little trick in the book, thinking someday they will get their husbands hooked. The women live an accepted existence, accepting the crumbs in the marriage while trying to turn those crumbs into cake. Sadly, they are rarely able to get enough crumbs to make a cookie, forget a cake. This is truly a tragic waste of human life. So do you feel that's true and accurate?
Oh, my goodness. When I and to be honest with you, Bonnie, I love all your books, and I have all your books, but Doomed Grooms was my favorite one, because it helped me to understand. And when I read about the straight gay man, that is my ex-husband. I mean, everything that you wrote there. As I said before, my ex-husband has married another woman and had a baby with this woman. And when we spoke the other night, there's nothing I can do, but I pray for this woman every single night. I don't want to see anybody have to go through what me, you, and all the women that you help have gone through, but I know she will, and that's what hurts me so bad for her, you know.
And that's true. The only thing I can say is this. Sometimes these men really luck out, and they find women who are far more broken than we are, and who really are able to accept things, you know, because they've had nothing in life. Now they have a little more than nothing. They still don't have something. But, you know, for some desperate women, you know, just having anything, no matter how bad it is better than having nothing.
Right.
And these guys, once again, they pick the prototype of woman who will accept, you know, bad behavior. You know, women who are, you know, like I say, broken themselves or broken beyond what we are. Who will just, you know, they want a baby, they want a family, they're not thinking of ramifications, and even if you had some problems, well, everybody has problems, you never know what you're quite getting. They'll justify everything.
Right.
But, you know, I do feel sorry for some of them, you know, really are good women who really didn't want to sign up for this. They had no idea that this is what was going to happen.
Right.
So I always tell women, you know, I know it's really hard to think about this, but sometimes if you know your husband's getting married, and you want to alert that other woman. A lot of women feel funny doing that, and I don't blame you, but I don't feel funny doing it. If anybody here is listening and they would like me to do it, I'd be happy to send them, you know, a book to read. They'll never know your name or how they got it, and I'll just say, I think this book's important for you to read. And, of course, I don't think it will stop a lot of women from getting married because, you know, women don't want to believe the worst in anyone. But I always tell, you know, members of our support group, just putting the ideas in their heads so that when this stuff starts happening, they don't have to start thinking, what's wrong with me?
Absolutely.
You know, that they'll realize it's not them.
Well, when I was on your show last time, that's what I had talked about was the letter that I wrote to this woman, only I didn't write it to her.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I prayed about it, and I wrestled with the thought. It was kind of convoluted, really, but I wanted her to know, but I knew that if it came from me, he would tell her I was crazy and all this. So I kind of made it a very about a group of men that had been married to women and that were gay. I did not, in the letter from these make-believe men, I did not down the man for being gay. I just explained. I gave her some signs that men do and all that, but I wrote it to the sister telling her. And I don't know if she ever gave the letter to her sister or not. I have no idea, but I hope she did, and I hope that it planted the seed that one day when all the signs start appearing, she'll kind of know what's going on. But I felt really good about it when I sent it because I just felt like if I could stop her from, I knew that when I sent it, it was pretty new in their marriage. I don't know exactly when they got married or anything like that. I know it was in 2010. But I just wanted her to know some of the signs to look for. And I hope that it helps one day. That's all I can say.
Right. And even if it wasn't on that day, there will come a time when the sister complains to the other one that things are amok. And at least they'll understand, you know, what the problem could be.
Right.
But, Grace, maybe you could talk a little bit. We've had, you know, a lot of women lately coming to us in our support group. And I'm very grateful that you come there, you know, and help out. But so many of them come up with the same thing. I don't have proof.
Right.
What do you say to them?
Well, Bonnie, you know, I can totally relate to them because at the beginning, even after seeing the computer and everything, I still was in the denial. But you say it so eloquently when you tell them, if you're not happy, then you need to move on. It's difficult to not have them say I'm gay or you catch them or whatever, but I'm going to give your listeners a little advice that my counselor gave me, and it really helped me, and I hope it helps them. She told me to buy a little spiral notebook and keep it in my purse. And every time I thought about something that my ex-husband had done during the marriage that sent off a red flag up or a little bell went off or whatever, to write it down. And she said, you don't have to share it with me or anyone else. It may take you months to do it, but you have that little spiral with you everywhere you go, and you just write it down. Well, it did. It took me about 2.5 months. When I went for that appointment those months later, I told her I had finished it, and she said, I just want to know how many things that you have on that list. And I said, 53. And I looked up at her face, and her eyes were as big as saucers, and she said, Grace, you have to know now with that many signs. And I said, I still have my doubts. So she made me go home and read it out loud as if I was reading it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
After I got to number 5, I'm sitting there going, what am I thinking? Why am I denying this? So after I read it out loud, all 53 things, I thought, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And so then that's what started the process of me knowing and really accepting the fact that I was married to a gay man. But it took me to actually read it out loud. I had written it, and I had looked at it, but I had to say it out loud. And so when I started saying the things that he had done, it helped me.
I think I'll take it one step further, which I think is a great idea. Do exactly what you were told to do. Write down everything. But then when you're reading it, you know, for those women who just aren't not at the point where you were, pretend your best friend or your sister wrote it down, and she's reading it to you, and she's asking you for advice. What advice would you give her?
That's exactly what when I went back to my counselor and I told her that, I said, if someone had been reading this to me, I would have been giving them advice, get out or whatever. And she said, that's exactly what I wanted you to feel. That's exactly what I wanted you to feel. So it was one of my aha moments. You know, it was one of those things where I said, when you read it out loud, as mm-hmm. if you're telling somebody, it was right there staring me in the face. You know, when you get up at 2:00 in the morning to go to the bathroom, and of course you're getting out of the bed where your husband isn't with you, he's on the couch, and you're going to the bathroom, and you see him underneath the blanket on the couch watching Brokeback Mountain at 2:00 in the morning, there's
that's
a sign here.
That's definitely a good sign.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I also tell women, this is my aha moment for them that usually works, when nothing else will. You know, I say to them, just based on what you know about your marriage, you know, many of our women do have children, they have daughters, but if not, they have sisters. If not, they have, you know, extremely close girlfriends. But I say, you know, if you have a daughter or a sister and she came to you and said, I'm marrying a guy just like that, or just like, you know, my brother-in-law, what would you tell her to do? Would you tell her, great, go ahead and do it? And it's funny how not one woman has ever said to me, yes, I would tell her to do it.
No.
So I say, if it's not good enough for you, for them, why is it good enough for you?
Absolutely.
If you would tell them, no, don't do it, why are you still doing it?
Right.
You know, why are you worth any less than they're worth? You know, then that's where I have to start right. And question why women don't have that feeling of worth.
Absolutely.
That they're not worth more than this.
And, you know, we as women are nurturers. That's just our nature, is to nurture,
mm-hmm.
you know. But we forget to nurture.
And broken women nurture more than anybody.
Absolutely.
Because they're trying to feel whole.
Absolutely. But we never nurture ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And nurturing yourself is so important. And it took me a long time to learn how to nurture myself. And but you have to take that time every day to do something for you in order to feel like a human being, feel like a woman again. And we're so good at doing it for everybody else, our children, our husbands, our family members, our friends even. But if you don't take that time to nurture yourself, you're doing yourself a great discredit, and it takes some time to learn how to do it. And we should be so good at it, but we aren't good about doing it for ourselves.
No, and in fact, I think that many of our women feel guilty if they do it for themselves, because
right.
we've become such caretakers. You know, it's kind of like I tell my students, you know, I teach during the day, and, you know, for a living. I own a GED center here in Philadelphia, you know, for people who didn't finish high school.
Right.
And when I do my orientations for the students, I tell them the same thing I tell our women. You know, people who drop out of high school, very similarly to women who, you know, marry gay men, they're caretakers. You know, broken people become caretakers.
Right.
And we're so used to taking care of everybody that, you know, when we try to take care of ourselves, people try to make us feel guilty because they're so used to us doing for them all the time that when you want to do something for yourself, all of a sudden they're thinking, like, you're selfish. Because
right.
it means they're going to miss out on something because you're not doing everything in the world for them.
Absolutely.
So I just think it's hard for women to realize that you have to start doing for yourself because nobody's going to be doing for you. All these people you're running to help, when you need help, how many of them are going to be there for you? Do you find that
right.
to be true?
Right. It's that just like that old saying that if you don't look out for yourself, no one else is going to do it for you. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, even if it means going and taking a hot bubble bath and locking the bathroom door where no one else can come in there and, be needing something or whatever, it starts off as little bitty things. I have never, ever in my entire life stayed in my nightgown all day long and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it about a month ago. I felt so guilty. I live alone. I have, my children have grown and I live by myself. I felt so guilty and I thought, why am I feeling guilty about this? I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked all week. I have a right to stay in my nightgown all day and do nothing but lay on the couch and watch my favorite TV programs or whatever. But I did. I felt guilty about it. And we've got to stop doing that. We've got to stop feeling guilty when we need something, whether it be rest or to go out with our friends or go buy ourselves something pretty to make us feel good or go have a pedicure or whatever it is. We have to take that time to nurture us, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. So, Grace, do you feel that, you know, like for women who feel it takes so long to get over this, it does take a long time, right?
Yes. Yes.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, why it takes so long.
Well, for me, and I can only talk for me, is it was a death. The death of a marriage and the death of a relationship. And I told you this one time was that the man that I married and the man that I fell in love with does not exist. The man that's there looks like the man that I fell in love with and the man that I married, but the man that I thought he was does not exist. And so when you finally come to the realization that the marriage is over or you're about ready to figure out a plan to leave or whatever, you have to go through the grieving process. And there's the denial, and then there's anger, and there's some other steps. And then there's finally that wonderful, glorious step of acceptance. And but it takes some time, and Wendy says it best, is you kind of go back and forth. I lived in denial, and then I'd get angry, and then I might go back to denial for a little while, and but it does take a long time, and it took me about a year and a half until I really started having days where there were more good days than there were bad days, and I cannot stress enough to all your ladies that come to you for help and listen to your radio program that if they can come to one of your healing weekends, it's the best gift you will ever give yourself. Because when I came to Houston, I was very nervous. I'm very, very nervous. But when I got in that room with you and the other ladies, there is a sisterhood that happens in that room where you can cry together, you can laugh together, but everybody totally understands what you're going through. And that was the first time in a year and a half that I felt that way. And I met some wonderful women there, and everybody told their stories and everything. But the weird thing about it, the weird but wonderful thing about it is everyone in that room lived the same life. They were married to different men. They might have had different experiences, but they lived your life. And I cannot stress enough, if they can come to one of your healing weekends, wherever they can go, to the one in Philadelphia, the one in Houston. I know you've had one in Florida before. But I cannot stress enough, because honestly, Bonnie, honestly, when I left out of there that weekend, that really was the beginning of a transformation in me. You can listen to your radio program and you can go to the chat room. But when you get there and see these women face to face and get to speak with them and everything, it is a life-changing experience for a woman that's going through this.
It is. And I think that you know, once again, we feel so isolated. That's the funny part. This is a situation that makes women feel so isolated, like they're the only ones in the world who are going through this.
Right.
And that's because it's kept hush-hush. People don't want to talk about it. You know, they feel it's a sense of embarrassment, and especially women feel, well, people are going to think I'm stupid. They're going to say, well, he was straight when he married you. You know, how did he become gay? They're going to look at you as less than a woman. Every possible apprehension and fear that you can think of, I've heard, and I've lived myself, you know, having been in that situation. But when you get to group support, there's really nothing more validating than that, because of the fact that you see other women who you can identify with, each and every one of them. You may not look like them. You may be a different color, different religion, different background, nationality, language. The bottom line is we've all walked the same road. And maybe we've walked it differently. You know, maybe some women had good husbands, some had crappy husbands, some had husbands who will never tell, some have husbands who are honest. Everything, you know, circumstances are different, but all the emotional impact is the same. And to meet other women who can understand exactly what you're saying, because I think you'll confirm this, Grace, that a lot of times people really judge us without understanding the situation. Like, here are some of the things they judge us on, and I think that most of us go through this. Like when people say to us, well, the marriage is over. Like, why can't you get over it?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, why are you still upset? Why are you still angry? You know, okay, so he was gay. It could have been worse. What if he was cheating with women? You know, they come up with the stupidest things that you can ever imagine people will say. They don't understand the emotional impact that these marriages do, and people will say, well, okay, but there's bad marriages with straight people. And that's absolutely true, too. I'm not negating that at all. I had a bad marriage with a straight man before the last husband.
Right.
My point is that there is different emotional, you know, problems that come up with being married to a gay man, because not only is it a bad marriage, but it's a marriage where you're living in a state of confusion, where you don't know what's going on and why, where there's a problem and you can't fix it, and that you are constantly losing yourself of who you are because you're always trying so hard to make him love you and be pleased. So you lose yourself more so than in other marriages. And it's a no-win situation. There's just no way to win.
Right.
So I think that most of us have to go through that whole, you know, learning to trust ourselves again. You know, we lose faith in ourselves that we're making bad judgments. And how come we couldn't see this? Did you feel that way?
Oh, yes. And, you know, Bonnie, the sad thing about it is in your books and some of the women that I met there, their gay husbands were their first husbands, their only husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so you and I both were married before. We know what it's like to be married to a straight man, and it is so different. And but it's, what's so sad for me is that some of these women do not know what a real marriage is.
They will never have had sex with a straight man. I mean, that's really pathetic,
too. That's exactly right. And, you know, marriage is a lot of things. It's based on a lot of things, children and you know, working together to make a life together. But intimacy is a very important part of that. And for some of these women that have been married for years and years and years and never experienced what true passion is with a straight man is so sad to me, you know. And if they ever could experience, and I hope and pray that every woman out there that's been with a gay man, married to a gay man, can experience a relationship with a straight man, and then they will realize that the word marriage, even though you committed yourself to him, it was never a marriage in the true sense of marriage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel so bad when I hear stories or read stories in your books of these women that have been married 20, 30, 40 years to a man and never got to experience the real passion in a marriage, you know. And I told you about hanging little signs up in my house that reaffirm things about me. I have one that's my favorite, and it says, I want a man who messes up my lipstick and not my mascara. not my mascara. And
okay.
I want
that
a man
really great.
Who,
I love that.
Yeah, and I love it too because
did you make
I want
it up?
A man. No, I found it somewhere years ago, and
uh-huh.
I just loved that. I thought, I want a man who kisses me so passionately that my lipstick wears off, but not one that makes me cry and has my mascara running down my face.
Yeah, I love
and,
that.
Yeah, so I put it on a piece of a poster board, and I have little reaffirming signs all around my house that when I do start not having doubts about him, but start thinking down on myself or whatever, I read that and read my little signs, and I think, okay, I'm all right now, you know. So, but that's the kind of man I want.
And I think that's the kind of man we all deserve, and they're out
yes.
there. But let me ask you this question, Grace, because this comes up also, and maybe you can address this for women. You were open enough to tell people this was your second marriage. It wasn't your first marriage.
Right.
And I have women who come to me, and they're so afraid of leaving because they messed up in their first marriage, and now it's second marriage. And
right.
I don't quite understand the logic. You know, I was married more than once also, and I knew the second one was terrible, but I didn't personalize like it's my fault if I leave.
Right.
But they're feeling like they failed if they leave because they already had one bad marriage.
No. They can't feel that way. I told you that I'm going to be honest with you, Bonnie. Unless I had some kind of miracle happen, I probably would still be with my ex-husband had I not gotten the cancer and he left. And because I was so broken, you know.
Now I know.
I mean, if he could come back on bended knee and promise me the moon and back, and there is no way I would take him back.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes that feeling that these women are having, well, I failed at one marriage and I failed it, and now I don't want to fail at another one, is because of their self-esteem issues. There are just marriages that people don't need to be in, you know. I have a girlfriend who just recently went through a divorce, being married for 38 years to her husband, and they just grew apart. And she said, you know, they don't hate each other. There's no malice and no anger and anything. They just couldn't live together anymore. And for those people, that's wonderful that they can do that. But there has to be a time when you start thinking that, If I don't get out of this, I'm going to. It's about your health, your mental health, more importantly than in most cases your physical health. Of course, we've already discussed that about physical abuse. If a man's hitting you, whether he's gay or straight, you need to leave. Period. You know. But if this is not you hear these women. Some of the ones that you've set me up with for support, they tell me I'm so miserable and I'm so unhappy. Well, that's what you say. It's reason enough to leave. We're given such a short time on this earth. Why be miserable? Why be unhappy in it? This is sad, but I can understand where they're coming from, and they don't want to be a failure, but you didn't fail. That's the one thing in these marriages is we are not the failures here. We went into this marriage with all honesty and the integrity of a marriage and wanting to be a wife to this man. And he came in with his secret that we were not privy to.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to put it. You know, it's
yeah.
not like you're walking to a marriage where you know what's going on.
Absolutely.
There's no way for us to foretell this or to know there's no training manuals. If you do marry a gay man, here's
no.
what you have to do. I mean,
that's
we don't have any of those books to read. You know, we're blindsided. We don't understand it. In all fairness, a lot of the men don't understand it when they're marrying us. I really do believe that many men marry with good intentions. They love their wives. You know, they're hoping whatever feelings they have that, you know, they don't want to call it gay, but whatever those male attractions are. You know, they've read so many articles, you know, from the Kinsey reports that this is normal, all men go through this. So they're hoping that they're just one of these normal men, that all men go through this kind of guys, and hoping that by loving you enough and staying married to you, having children, having a family, having the American dream, that these feelings will someday fade into the sunset and they won't have to ever bring it up again. So, I mean, it's a matter that we don't know what's going on. Some of them don't even know what's going on. But that's the great thing I always say about life. You know, every day is an opportunity to fix a mistake. And these marriages are a mistake. You know, I just want to bring up something that you said. And I know this sounds pretty pathetic, too. But, you know, when I was married to my gay husband, he was never physically abusive to me. He wouldn't put a hand on me. You know, that wasn't his nature. He was just very frustrated because he was living where he didn't belong, namely married to me. So there was a lot of yelling all the time, and he was very, you know, very vocal. And, you know, I like to live in a state of peace. You know, I'm not one for fighting. So it's easy to make me feel like, you know, to shut me down and shut me up and shut me down, as I used to call it. But the point is that sometimes I would be hoping against hope that, you know, I would try to egg him on to hit me. You know, I wanted proof. I wanted people to see how I was being, you know, abused. And if you don't have those bruises, people think, well, you're making it up. You know, they don't take emotional abuse as being like something that's really dangerous, like physical abuse. But I think in many ways it's even more dangerous because it's an ongoing everyday thing of robbing you of who you are. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, people really underrate the emotional abuse in marriages. Do you feel that way too?
Oh, most definitely. And like I said, my first husband, my straight husband, had become physically abusive with me. Those marks, the bruises or the black eyes or whatever it is, they go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens to you when someone tears you down emotionally, verbally assaults you. And women have to realize that verbal and emotional abuse is abuse. And those marks are on the inside, but they never go away. You can't take away something that you've said. You can't unring a bell. And so when they tell you, my gay husband used to tell me I was worthless, I was useless. And when you hear that over and over and over again, my dad used to tell me that. My dad used to tell me he wished I had never been born. So when you start believing that about yourself, those scars stay with you and they never go away. You have to fight that feeling all the time when you're feeling worthless or useless or whatever it is. But when you constantly have that being said to you, you start believing it yourself. And that's the saddest part about it, is that when you feel like you, and you know, some of these men don't ever do that to their wives, but just the fact that they don't make you feel wanted in a sexual way is abuse enough in a way that you don't feel like a woman anymore. And that's a horrible feeling when you don't feel like a woman.
Right. I always say you didn't marry a guy to be his sister.
That's
you know,
right.
But that wasn't the intent when you got married. And when, you know, women would say to me, well, I told my husband when we were watching a movie, look how romantic it is. And he would say, oh, well, those are only movies. That's not real life. And I tell them, wrong. That is real life. You know, it's not his life because he's a gay man, but normal, healthy men, that's what they want. They want sex. They want passion. They want the excitement. They want the friendship. They want the camaraderie. You know, they don't want to have to just be your shopping buddies or, you know, let's watch television, dear. You know, that's not what real marriage and real relationships are like. You know, especially when you're younger. I mean, you know, when people get more settled in, maybe it's, you know, more companionship. But believe me, he's had years of passion and good times and remembrances. And as I tell people, you know, I'm 61, I'm still having a great sex life. So, you know, it'll be 19 years next month. You know, I'm so excited that, you know, like my boyfriend was saying to me, it's almost 20, you know, going on 20 years, and look how strong we're still going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a straight man. I mean, okay, I'm not saying it's every straight man, but, you know, especially not every straight man his age. But point is that you know, the passion's there, the excitement's still there. You know, we still care about each other in that way. And that's what women deserve in their life. If they can't have that from a man, they don't need to have the man there to be their brother or their cousin. Let your brother move in.
Yeah,
you need to expect more from a husband, right?
Absolutely. And see, my ex-husband was 11 years younger than me. I married him when he was 31 years old, and I was 42.
Oh, my God.
But he never wanted to have sex. And I know for a fact that 30-year-old men want to have sex. So,
did you ever confront him after you found the stuff?
No. He has no clue that I know about him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I knew that he was, I knew that there was something very wrong. He never called me a nymphomaniac, but he would tell me I put too much pressure on him. The robotic and the mechanical intimacy was, and then immediately after it was over, he would run to the bathroom and take a shower or whatever, and that affects you as a woman too, because you feel like there's no cuddling. You know, it was almost like he had to wash me off, you know, and wash the
experience. And that's common for
off.
A lot of these husbands. I hear these stories very often.
Yeah.
They have to run to the bathroom as soon as sex is over to get cleaned up.
Yeah, and it's just, it just starts really peeling away just one layer at a time, you as a woman. And it's just so, once the women that are first started going through it, I remember the pain and I remember the heartache, and I used to get angry when people would tell me things were going to get better. I knew eventually things were going to get better, because nothing ever stays bad forever, nothing ever stays good forever. But when you're going through the pain of it at the very beginning, especially, you don't want to hear that it's going to get better. You just want it to get better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't think any of us fault our husbands for being gay. I definitely don't fault my ex-husband for being gay, but I do fault him for how he handled everything in this. And now more so than anything is that he's putting another woman through this. I just think that that's just horrible, and I think it's cowardly to do this.
It is. And I think that we all agree that gay is not a choice, but what you do with it is a choice.
Right.
And I'll even go further. I'll even give these guys some extra credit that they got into these marriages and they really believed that they could not be gay, you know, that they could become straight, or that whatever feelings they were having would go away. I really do believe a lot of them thought that.
Right.
But from the time that you start realizing that's not the story, that's when you have an obligation to tell your wife. You know, you took marriage vows to love, to cherish these women. And so many times I have guys who say to me, I love my wife so much, I can't do this to her, I can't tell her the truth. No, you must tell her the truth. You're getting it mixed up. You know, she has to know why things aren't working in the marriage. And you can't tell me she's 100% happy, although they do try to tell me that. Oh, no, she's really happy. She's happy with not having sex with you. Well, not all women want to have sex all the time. You know, I said, don't even try it. You know, you have to tell her. I mean, if you love someone truly, do the right thing.
Right.
And some men do, but some never will. They feel like there's no point in telling her. They're selfish. Right?
Yeah, and my husband will never admit that he's a gay man, ever. I know that for a fact. He will never, ever. You know, Bonnie, this is the one thing you may not agree with me on this, but I think that there is a difference of loving somebody and being in love with somebody. I love a lot of people, but I'm not in love with a lot of people. And so I married my ex-husband, and I was in love with him. I believe he loved me. I believe all these men go in there with a certain amount of love for the woman that they're marrying. But I don't ever believe that they're in love, because that's impossible for them to be in love with a woman. Now, that's how I feel. I think they're in love with a woman. Yes, and I think they're in love with the hoping against hope that this woman is going to change them. But
right, I agree with you. I don't think they're capable of being in love.
Right.
And that doesn't mean they can't show love to a woman like they show to their sister or family member.
Right.
But I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I could never live with somebody who I just loved. You know, I'm madly in love with my boyfriend. But, you know, if I wasn't madly in love with him, he wouldn't be my boyfriend. He'd be my friend. I don't want a friend to be my, you know, relationship partner.
That's exactly right. And that's the sad part for women, is because they all go into these marriages being in love with this man. And they're never given that same love back to them. And so, like I said, you can't make sense of this. You just can't. You just have to go through the steps of trying to pick up the pieces of your life and do what you need to do, rebuild, to do what you need to do, I know a lot of women have financial problems and they can't afford to go to a counselor, but there are church organizations that can set you up with somebody to at least talk to.
There's all kinds of free services.
You know, yes, there are.
They have all kinds of counseling services, from family service.
Right. You know, there's all places where women can go. Yeah, and you just cannot, talking to you and getting your newsletters and everything were such a support. But having that one-on-one on a periodic basis with somebody that's going to give you the step-by-step kind of road to walk to get better. Mine worked on with me, my thought process, because Bonnie, I'm going to tell you, my worst enemy through this entire thing was my own brain, because it was constantly working overtime and thinking thoughts that were not realistic and all this, and my own brain was my worst enemy, and we had to change the way I thought about things, and that was a process, and it took a while, but now that's better, but that's all I can tell women out there, is that you may never, ever, ever get confirmation. But when you know, I believe that our intuition, they call it woman's intuition, I believe that that's such a strong, powerful force in our bodies that tells us that something is not right, and we need to listen to that. And you've said it best, when women call you, you say, "No woman that has a straight husband calls me." And if they've gotten in contact with you, they need to know that that's 99.9% of the time that that's what it is your husband is a gay man.
Right. They have to trust their instincts. And I think what you said was a great idea. You know, if you're listening to this show tonight or whenever you listen into it, what's really important, like Grace did, get a little book, start writing down notes in there. And spend a week just writing down any thoughts that come to your mind that make you think that this is a possibility. And once you see them all in front of you, not just, you know, passing thought or a pass, you know, write them down so you can visually look at them all in one time. And then read them out loud, like Grace did, and she read them to herself. Pretend your daughter or your best friend or somebody else, if that doesn't work for you, is reading, you know, sent you this note and they want you to read it and give advice on what should they do. And if you don't see it then there's something, you know, that you have to do next. But I think that's like the best thing, you know, as far as getting started. And as far as catching, you know, one thing I did want to mention, that in 2 weeks on the 16th from today, I have a wonderful guest coming on our show that, you know, I was very happy that, you know, he agreed to come on the show. You know, I'm always looking for ways for women to be able to, you know, get the truth, because some women will just always live with this hanging over their heads. And you were really fortunate that you got the confirmation, you know, even if it was later on, at least you can rest with peace of mind that, you know, whatever you suspect is true. But a lot of women have a really difficult time because their husbands are really smart to the spyware on the computer. A lot of these guys get advice from these, you know, husband groups on how to erase your tracks on your computer, because I've seen their postings, so I know that they're doing this.
Right.
So I always think to myself, these poor women, you know, there has to be a way. And, you know, people can't afford to hire private detectives.
Right.
That, I mean, that's not a reality for most of our women. But I'm having a, you know, company on. They're really wonderful. And they have all kinds of really interesting spyware, not for the computer, but for your home.
Right.
And for your car. I mean, stuff that is just amazing. It's going to be up on my website next week. But, you know, if you want to catch your husband, now you have a much more viable way to do it if you can't get to the, you know, computer or the cell phone. But, you know, these are audio and visual recording mechanisms. Like, you can put one in the car and it's voice activated. So you'll hear who he's talking to in the car on his cell phone, even if he doesn't leave any tracks behind. So I want to give women every opportunity to find out the truth when their husbands can't be honest with them. And I'm not saying you can use this necessarily in court, but you can certainly use it as leverage. And sometimes you can use it in court if you can prove adultery or whatever the case is.
Right.
But women need every kind of possible way to arm themselves, you know, against, you know, these marriages destroying them.
Absolutely. And I'm very fortunate in the fact that I found that computer, because I probably would still be kind of stuck in that stage of wanting confirmation or trying to find something. But like I said, he had erased the history, but he didn't erase the cookies. And that's where I found the proof that I needed. But it was after the marriage was over. So, but I just can't stress enough for women to listen to your program, your radio program, every Sunday night, and to go into the chat room. But I just cannot reiterate enough for them to try to make it to one of your healing weekends, because it truly is life-changing. And
it is, and we have the new one. Let's talk a little bit about the Houston one, because that's going to be on March 2nd and 3rd, and that Saturday and Sunday. And the place we stayed was really beautiful, wasn't it?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
I mean, I couldn't believe how beautiful this place was, and the price was so reasonable. I mean, here in Philadelphia, that same kind of hotel room would cost you like $500-$600. There it's like $90 a night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really on a spa resort in Houston. And it was just gorgeous. The accommodations are wonderful. They throw in breakfast for you. And, of course, you know, it's my yearly, you know, gift to women to put this together. There's no charge for it other than your transportation and the hotel and food. But, you know, once again, I tell women, invest in yourself as far as, you know, coming to these, because really some dynamite women are down there. You know, I'm always thrilled, you know, of course, to see Wendy. She'll be there. And Wendy, she's like a role model to all of us to look up to as far as her thoughts and her words. I know they've inspired so many of our women. You'll be there. You know, other women who were there last year will be coming back. And new women who have written to me are going to be coming. And I think that just sharing these experiences and spending a day doing great bonding, you know, just it's intense. But we're going to do, you know, some different things this time also that we did in Philadelphia. We had some art projects on the second day as far as some healing art projects, and everybody really enjoyed it here in Philly doing those projects. We'll be doing some there, and that everybody can walk away with something to always remind them and feel better about themselves and from the weekend. And, in fact, the group that was here in Philadelphia in September, we had about 20-some women here in that group. You know, they started their own page on Facebook where they, you know, everybody communicates from that group. So, you know, they've been wonderfully supportive to each other. So,
Right.
And the funny thing is the woman who took the lead, I won't mention her name, she's a wonderful woman. She came to me on the spur of the moment. Her daughter actually drove her here to Philadelphia from, you know, Connecticut. And she was married for so many years and still in the marriage, but just didn't want to have to see what was really facing her. And that weekend just changed her life. You know, she's the one running the support group on the Facebook, so.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah,
well,
she went from nowhere to being now an activist for women who are, you know, who are in this situation. But she felt that was such the most meaningful thing that could happen was coming to a group of women who knew exactly what she was going through and who didn't say to her, well, it's your imagination or you must be crazy or maybe it's not because maybe you're not a good enough wife. You know, people give us the most ridiculous messages, you know,
yes,
in these marriages,
do.
Right?
They do. Oh, and for me, the main thing now is when I do tell somebody that I was married to a gay man and that he's remarried another woman, immediately they say, well, then he can't be gay. If he got married again, Grace, he can't be gay. And before that used to really hurt me. Now it's just like you don't even know what you're talking about and I just move on, you know.
Right, now you don't have to take personal offense because you know it's them and not you.
Absolutely, but the one thing that I can tell, especially the women that are going through this, that they don't have confirmation. There was a woman at our Houston group that was kind of going through that where she didn't know for sure. And I think you'll know who I'm talking about. I would never mention her name, but she was telling everybody what her husband was doing. And then someone said, well, how many of you think that her husband is gay? And everyone at the table raised their hand. So I don't know if that helped, but I think sometimes if you can tell your story and let other women that have been there hear it, they can really make you feel that that what you're thinking is confirmed. So I can just only tell you over and over again, if you can start saving your money, maybe for this holiday season you can ask for someone to pay for your hotel room or whatever for the weekend or whatever, and you can come because it is an absolute. There's tears, but there's also a lot of laughter, and you meet great women and form friendships, and it's really a nice time. So,
yeah, well, I appreciate that because like I said, I'm really excited about going back, and you know, people don't have to be from Texas. We have people coming from all over. And
right.
It's really important to find that support wherever you can get it and to confirm that you're not the crazy one, that whatever you're going through is very normal for all of us. And I think that was the important part, that even though, like Grace said earlier, we're all in different situations, we all heard so many similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody would say, oh, I went through that same thing. Oh, my husband treated me the same way. Oh, he was doing the same thing to me, you know, and I think I mentioned this maybe last week on the show, maybe not, but, you know, I'm going to have a new book coming out this year, I decided, and it'll kind of be different than the other books. I'm going to make it a book. I'm going to ask for everybody to contribute to it, and it's going to be a little book called Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things, and the whole purpose of this book is to let women know that whatever your husband's telling you, we've already heard it.
Right.
We already know what it is. You know, we're going to go into all the different things that they say because eventually you'll see a pattern that they're all saying the same thing.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think that we learned a lot of that when we get together. Your husband did that? My husband says the same thing. Oh, he has the same excuse. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think this will help women actually be able to identify more quickly that, yeah, this is what my husband's saying. He must be gay.
Right.
Because, you know, what the problem is that even when you confront them when they're gay, of course, they say you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. How could I be gay? You're making up stuff, and they make you start thinking that you're the one who's, you know, crazy.
Right.
So if we have this gay, little handbook on, you know, what to look for, what the signs are, I think it'll be a really big help for women. So that'll be my new future project this year.
You're a busy woman.
I know. I need to win a lottery. Do they have any big ones in Texas I could play?
Yeah, wouldn't that have been nice for what they just had?
I missed out on that big one that just happened.
Yeah,
I didn't win that one, but I guess it's not my time to retire yet. That's how I keep looking at it.
Right.
But anyway, Grace, I want to thank you so much for being my co-host this tonight, because you always say such important things, and I hate asking you to do it, but maybe in a couple of months you'll come back.
I've told you 1,000 times I'd do anything in the world for you after what you've done for me.
Aw, that's why you're like my Texas sister. But I feel the same way about you. And if anybody would like to, you know, send a note to Grace, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to forward it to her. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And just put in there, please, you know, get me in touch with Grace. And if any of you are interested in our Texas retreat coming up, please also write to me at bonkay@aol.com. And I'll be happy to put you on the list of information as we're moving forward. And also next week, we're going to be having a wonderful guest, Maggie, who's been our guest before. And what I love about Maggie is that she has the best tips on how to check out your husband. You know, she's always really so great at that, giving our women really good tips. And then the week after that, we'll be having on the spyware company that I'm now working with, Mega Security. And they'll be telling you about some of the beautiful spyware to catch your husbands. And then the following week after that, it looks like Misty will be back. And also over the holidays, we'll also have a return appearance by Dr. Brian Hooper, who will be trying to give some comfort to our women, you know, trying to just make them feel better. So we have some really great shows coming up. So please keep listening. And Grace, thank you again, and I'll be talking to you soon. And before you turn around, it'll be our time to get big hugs from each other.
I know.
Because it's already December.
I know. Can you believe it?
No, in 3 months I'll be down there hugging you.
I can't wait.
It's 3 months from today. Can you believe it?
Oh, it'll be wonderful. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. We'll have a great time. All right, so everyone, have a wonderful week. If you know me, you know how to find me, bonkay@aol.com. And Grace, I'll be talking to you soon. And love to all of you, and love to you, Grace.
Love to you too, Bonnie. Good night, everyone.
Good night.